You realize that Anomaly Supplemental is basically Anomaly podcast fan fiction.
It is.
I think most of the time I'm Jen and you're Angela.
I'm pretty sure that's exactly what happened.
Anomaly. Something that deviates from what is standard, normal, or expected. An oddity, peculiarity, irregularity, inconsistency, incongruity, a rarity.
Hi, I'm Sue, and next Saturday I'll be running a 10K in a Wonder Woman costume, and I am an anomaly.
And my name is Casey, and if I met a sexy vampire who offered me eternal life and romance, I would run away like a normal person. But I'm still an anomaly.
Hi, and welcome to Anomaly Supplemental. We are going to be talking about somewhat of a hot topic recently, which is Mary Sue's and strong female characters.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a topic that has actually been on our ideas list for quite some time, and we decided to bump up the recording date, basically because it has become such a highly talked about topic, especially on our own Facebook page.
Yeah, and, you know, it all started with Star Trek Into Darkness and discussing the female characters in there, and Jen and Angela had their views, which they discussed in their most recent podcast as of this recording. But we thought we'd go a little more into the topic about what defines a Mary Sue and a strong female character, and maybe the blurred lines in between.
And I propose that we don't mention Uhura or Carol Marcus at all. Deal?
Deal.
All right. Because, again, this is an issue that goes beyond Star Trek, although there are plenty of Mary Sues or Gary Stews in mm-hmm. Star Trek. But first, what have you been up to? Reading, watching, playing?
Well, I haven't been reading a lot, which is why I'm glad we're including topics in general about what we've been doing. But I've been reading a lot of productivity books because I'm trying to get that stuff organized. Because I don't know if you people know this, but procrastination is an inherited trait in my family. And time management is a very poor thing. So I'm starting to get back into, you know, getting stuff done, like some of the creative projects I've been meaning to jump on. And if you're looking for a good productivity book, I recommend Rework and Steal Like an Artist, but also Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain for any of you people who want to learn how to draw, if that's been something you're interested in, and it just teaches you how to engage with the right side of your brain. And I finished The Parasol Protectorate. I've been watching Breaking Bad because, oh my God, so good. It's not for everybody, but I love it. And I've been listening to some writing podcasts like I Should Be Writing and the Nerdist Writers Panel, Writing Excuses.
Do you have anything else you need to share?
I don't know what I did.
You've made YouTube videos.
I did. I started making YouTube videos. I've been a little under the weather for the past week, so I haven't gotten them out as much as I've wanted to. But starting this next week, I'm going to get back on the ball with that. And it's basically just me talking about pop culture and philosophy and things, and sometimes theater, because I like theater. Hmm. And those are posted on my blog, Nerdery and Lifery, which I'll include a link. You can find it on my staff bio, but we can probably put it on the show notes if anybody would like to see. Also, I started reading Shogun by James Clavell, which is super hard, you guys. It's so hard. Because, like, books that are 1,000 pages long intimidate me. They scare me,
yeah.
Which is probably one of the reasons why I'm not continuing with The Song of Ice and Fire trilogy along with other issues, they're just so big. And I get so scared. So, but I promised Kevin I would read it by the end of the year. So I'm reading a chapter a day. So I should finish it within the course of 2 months.
But I actually have not been reading a whole lot. I finished The Book Thief at the beginning of August. And then I actually read a review copy of a book by a member of our community, Randy Crane, has written a book called Faith in the Magic Kingdom. And it is about, you know, Christianity and Disneyland. And he goes through, it's almost like a devotional, sort of, that takes you through Disneyland and using that as illustrations of what he's trying to teach and improvements to your life and ways of thinking, etc. So I read that for him and sent him a blurb, and that will be published, if anyone's interested, I believe on November 15th. And there's also a Facebook page for it. And after that, I've started reading the Graveyard book, but I haven't gotten very far. Most of my reading is done on my commute, and I've spent a lot of that time recently listening to podcasts, because we're recording this, I'll just say it, on August, what is today? August 24th. Mm-hmm. And I leave for Dragon Con on August 29th. So I've spent a lot of the last month focusing on preparing for Con. And that includes listening to podcasts. There is a series called from the Unique Geek called 50 Days of Dragon Con, where they start obviously 50 days out and talk to different track directors or staff members. And there's just a lot of really great information, but there's a new podcast almost every day, and they're usually about an hour long. So that's at least my commute in. And my commute out, I have been trying to cut down the many, many unheard podcasts in my iTunes. So I've sort of been failing at reading, but I'm getting other stuff done.
Yeah, that's important. By the way, have you seen the trailer for The Book Thief?
I have not.
It has, I don't know if you know this already or not, but it has my favorite actor, Jeffrey Rush, as one of the leading characters. And I've been planning on reading the book because it's been on my to-read list for a long time. That's what happens when you work at a bookstore at some point in your life. You see all the books and you add all the books to your Goodreads. But especially now that I've seen the trailer and know for a fact that Jeffrey Rush is in it, I'm going to start reading the book as soon as I can.
Well, the reason I picked it up to begin with is BuzzFeed had one of its articles about, you know, 10 or 15 or 87 or whatever number books to read before the movie comes out. And it was from that article that I basically went down the list and read the descriptions and added what I thought I might be interested in to my Goodreads. So hearing about the movie is why I picked up the book, and I thought it was great. But I have not actually seen the trailer yet.
It looks good. It probably looks like it is most likely going to be Oscar bait in some way. But
well, it is about Nazis and the Holocaust.
Well,
so.
By the way, I also saw The Butler. And that was fascinating. There were a few recognizable faces in there, like that were only on screen for like 2 minutes, like Alan Rickman and James Marsden, who played Cyclops in the X-Men movies, and Robin Williams. And of course Oprah Winfrey is in it, but she's not that geeky.
I saw Love's Labor's Lost in Central Park for Shakespeare in the Park, but it's been turned into a musical. And it sort of has, like, the pop culture references, and, like, they've updated it and made it sort of, like, silly. It didn't get a fantastic review in the Times, but that reviewer who had it sort of hates things that make him feel joy. No, it's true. He said about my favorite play of the past few years, Peter and the Starcatcher, he said that it was too joyful. Okay. But I thought it was really wonderful. And it was directed by one of my new favorite director, which is Alex Timbers.
What else has he done?
He did Peter and the Starcatcher. He did Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson.
I heard Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson was good.
It was really good. And it had some of the most amazing set dressing that I have ever seen. But that's pretty much it. A little bit of theater, a lot of podcasts, a lot of sewing and broken needles. That's what I've been up to for the last month.
Yeah, and I started looking for my cosplay, possibly, for Austin Comic Con this year.
Yay!
So, yeah, I think that's it. That's all I got.
No, real transition.
Yeah.
Transition! There it is. So, you want to jump into this super loaded topic?
When you say the word want, let's just start with the very first question that's written on our notes. What is a Mary Sue?
At this point in time, what is a Mary Sue currently depends on who you ask. The concept started in fan fiction. And Star Trek fan fiction, to be specific. It was a story, a parody story, called A Trekkie's Tale by a woman named Paula Smith, and published in a fanzine. So it was a published fan fiction. And the story is about Lieutenant Mary Sue, who is the youngest lieutenant in the fleet, 15 and a half years old, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And generally became, at first, a term used for a character that a fan fiction author inserted into the story to basically take their place, to be a stand-in for the author. And was sort of like a wish fulfillment stand-in, what you wanted to be, what you wanted to be in that universe. And it has since evolved a little bit and entered sort of mainstream consciousness, only in the past few years. You typically, before that, only heard the term Mary Sue on like alt Star Trek creative, or at least I did. Yes, I was / am a member of alt Star Trek creative. But now it has sort of taken on the role to be any character, especially in canon, because people are claiming it in movies and published books, that a Mary Sue or a Gary Stu is a character that is too perfect and too loved and just too, basically. Mm-hmm.
And I can kind of understand, I mean, as a wannabe writer, it is very hard not to put some part of yourself into your characters. And I'm not going to lie, I wrote fan fiction too. I wanted to be in the universes that I grew up on. But at the same time, when I was growing up and reading fan fiction, Mary Sue was actually just another name for an original female character.
Any original female character.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah. And you know, it was a parody when the genre said humor or comedy, because then it would be making fun of the Mary Sue. And it's honestly, it is easier to write a character when it is so based upon yourself and your experiences. And of course you want everyone to love you, which is why you see a lot of Mary Sue, or I saw a lot of Mary Sues when I was a teenager.
Of course. Yeah. The ones I remember most clearly were, you know, Picard's daughter who came on the Enterprise and like had this great mother-daughter relationship with Beverly. Obviously you should have known by now what type of fan fiction I'd be reading. But it's just like enough already. Like it's just too much. And I mean, in general now they're basically the term is used for really a poorly developed character who's lacking in realism, whether it be not enough flaws or maybe even too many flaws.
Mm-hmm. Or exaggerated flaws.
Yeah.
Bella Swan has been criticized by book critics and people who have read the book and didn't like it so much that Bella is just clumsy to a ridiculous point. Like, it doesn't make sense the way when she falls, when she does.
And that's where the term Mary Sue has sort of evolved. So now Bella is often classified as a sympathetic Sue, where mm-hmm. she has all these flaws, but she has them so that the other characters will feel bad for her, and the reader will feel bad for her, but everyone still loves her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's your sympathetic Sue. There are several others. It seems that there is one for every female character that there is, you could classify as some kind of Sue.
But what I've noticed about Mary Sue's is that, especially more recently, is that, and they've talked about this before on other podcasts and forums I like to visit, but in a way it's become a derogatory term in fiction and fandom.
Oh, yeah. And I think that this is where I get like wacko crazy feminist. I think that the evolution of the Mary Sue into all of these different types was sort of a response to women getting stronger in TV and movies. Whereas people were like, whoa, this obviously can't be an awesome character, so we have to demean her in some way.
Here's my thought on this. If you're writing something or you're creating something, and there's a character, and there are many characters involved, and there needs to be a plot, someone is going to have to play the damsel in distress. Sometimes it's the woman, and therefore she gets relegated to, oh, she's just a damsel in distress, she can't save herself. But then, when you hand her a gun and, you know, give her all these superpowers, you go, oh, that's just unbelievable, she's a Mary Sue, and everyone loves her.
And that reminds me of something that Seanan McGuire said on Tumblr this week, which Seanan is an author. She has written an urban fantasy series called the October Day series, and as Mira Grant wrote the Newsflesh series about zombies. And she was responding to something on Tumblr and wrote, "Unfortunately, we do hold women to higher standards, and some of them are both contradictory and impossible. It's like we've all turned into Goldilocks. Everything's either too hard, she's a bitch, she's unlovable, she's a villain, get her away from my precious boys, or too soft, she's girly, she's icky, she's too feminine, how dare she care about girlish things, get her away from my precious boys. There's no just right, not for girls in modern media."
That's really interesting. She has a point. And, you know, we're all going to have different opinions on female characters, and we see it on the Facebook group, and we see it on different forums that we may just lurk on. Like, I'm a lurker. I don't want to jump into anybody's conversation. I just want to watch.
Depends on how angry I get.
But I don't know. I mean, what's interesting is what some people consider strong and marketable if you're a producer or a director or something, and what is socially acceptable to other people, and that weird, they're trying to mesh that. And what it becomes is these super empowered women who are sort of unattainable, and like a lot of the people that I've seen on different Facebook groups and boards that are described as strong have superpowers or know how to wield a weapon.
Yeah, it seems like the strong female character idea sort of, at least recently when we've been talking about it, loses the character and it just becomes strong female, as in physically strong.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not necessary. You don't need to be physically strong to have strong character.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's where signals get crossed, because you can be strong of will, you can have dealt with a lot of crap and still be around. Like, there are lots of different ways to be strong. And there's been a sort of backlash, too, among women about the now cliched term strong female character. Mm-hmm. So perhaps we need to be talking about complex female characters, or well-written female characters, or just realistic female characters.
Yeah, but instead the words they're using in their articles, and I've read a few of them, they're using the word weak. Let's write and create weaker women, and I think that is poor word choice.
that is poor word choice to use in your articles, because I understand their points of view, but you know, you have to be very careful with the way you define characters now.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very careful. Because if with men and women and, you know, children and, you know, senior characters, if you offer up a suggestion or market it in a certain way, that's what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree that strong female character doesn't necessarily mean physically strong. Like, Buffy is a physically strong female character. However, she also has flaws. She loves shoes and shopping. And she has friends. She has people who don't like her that aren't supervillains. And she's horrible at romantic relationships.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think Tara is a really strong female character.
Like, all the women. Yeah, all the women on Buffy are wonderful in their own ways.
Yeah.
And they're written very well.
But I go to Tara especially because, yes, she is... She has powers. I guess she's a witch, but she's not as powerful as Willow.
Mm-hmm.
But what makes... For me, I think what makes Tara so strong is that all of the stuff that even happens in Once More with Feeling, when, you know, she figures out that Willow's been using magic on her to fix their relationship. She's hurt, of course, but that doesn't make her weak. She is strong enough to say, I can't do this anymore,
mm-hmm.
and walk away. And that's a kind of strength of its own.
Mm-hmm. What is also sad is when there is a female character who is well-defined in TV shows, people often want to relegate her to a love interest or set her up in, like, this ship that is either canon or non-canon.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I was watching one of Joss Whedon's panels in Comic-Con or something like that. And apparently when he was pitching Firefly, the producers said, we really like the show, we want to give you the green light. However, would it be possible for Zoe and Wash not to be married or give them some sort of problem? And Joss said, no. And they said, if you can't do that, we probably can't put the show on the air. And Joss said, don't put the show on the air then. And then later he got the call that said, okay, they can be married.
Just because they wanted turmoil?
Because they wanted drama. And yes, drama is interesting to watch. I watch Project Runway. Did you see the most recent episode? There was all sorts of yelling.
So much crying.
So much crying. However, there are also points of any show where it's light and it's funny and you get some relief. And I'm sorry, sometimes the will there or won't they relationships are tiring. We've seen them before.
And that, you know what I loved about BSG,
mm-hmm.
is that the Rosalind Adama thing that started out, then it actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was elated that it actually happened. But they were still both independent characters outside of their relationship. They could still function without the other one.
Yeah.
Which, like, A+, guys. There's nothing wrong with a woman in a television show or movie having a relationship. But
no.
Her character traits should define her relationship, not the other way around.
I strongly agree. And Rosalind is a great example of that. She doesn't have any superpowers. She's a normal woman. She's a teacher who got elevated to a president. And she had to make very tough choices, and she had to grow a very strong backbone through all of the things that happened, like her planet getting annihilated and forbidding people to avoid having children. In many ways, that could be a very unlikable trait in a character to call the shots for those people. To where they don't have a choice in whether or not to you know, have a family in a post-apocalyptic world. But she said, we need to get these people to procreate so that we can, so that when we inhabit a planet, there will be people to inhabit it. We can't go extinct.
Obviously, everyone is going to have their own opinion about whether they think a character is strong or not, and whether they think a character is a Mary Sue or not. And my question becomes, can you think a character is both, or can a character be both?
I think a character can be both, because, again, any sort of fiction is an ordinary person involved in extraordinary circumstances, mm-hmm. whether they be realistic, sci-fi, fantasy, Western, mystery, whatever. And in order for the protagonist to win out, they have to have, you know, special skills of some sort. And the plot has to go a certain way.
Especially a main character who's female. Well, yes, somebody's going to fall in love with her because she's the main character. She's the protagonist. Yes, she's going to be the one fighting the evil because she's the main character.
Yeah.
I don't think you can harp on a main character for being a main character.
Mm. And when we were doing preliminary research for this, Sue found a live journal discussion, which was people listing everyone they think is Mary Sue. And it pretty much covered every single character I've ever heard of.
Yeah. And I think they list the type of Sue, which makes me crazy. There's, I don't even know. Just the fact that it has become whatever trait is the most pronounced for any woman fits into that Mary Sue box.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I pulled up a short list of them. There's the black hole Sue that says everything's about me. The purity Sue, who wants everyone's love. The god mode Sue with overwhelming power. The jerk Sue, who's a total jerk, but everyone loves her anyway. The possession Sue, who is just like the author's favorite character, but even better. Which is also sometimes called the copycat Sue. The relationship Sue, for whom a canon character leaves their relationship to be with that character, the Mary Sue character. The sympathetic Sue, feel sorry for me. The anti-Sue, I'm genuinely useless, but everyone still loves me. The fixer Sue, which, I mean, I think the best description is actually Wesley Crusher. You know, so, like, any female character you think of is someone will have a box to put her in, basically.
Mm-hmm. And I hate to say it, people don't really do that much with men.
No.
You don't hear Gary Stu a lot. And, in fact, Wikipedia is confused about what to call them, too. In parentheses, it's like Marty
Stu, yeah.
Yeah. Whereas a female character, there is no Carrie, Lou, or whatever. It's Mary Sue, each and every one of them. Mm-hmm. And that's the most recognizable term. And, you know, that's frustrating. But it's a thing now. And, you know, there are women who are kind of turning it about, like the Mary Sue, the online news fanzine that covers everything about geekdom and women in fandom and all that stuff and cons and everything. Mm-hmm. They're fabulous and I love them.
They are.
But at the same time, people are still using it as a very negative term. And I personally am kind of tired of it. Yes, there are female characters that I don't like. And yes, I've described River Song as a Mary Sue. I'm guilty of that. But, you know, I can still dislike River Song and admit to myself, but someone else thinks she's a strong female character and a role model.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't disagree with that.
Yeah, one of my favorite characters on TV right now is Claudia Donovan in Warehouse 13. And in looking through all of these articles, she was picked out several times as being a fixer Sue. And another you know, part of the Mary Sue trope is that she often has a tragic past, which Claudia does. And she finds this family and everyone loves her and she's a super genius. And, you know, when thinking about it, I'm like, yeah, okay, she does kind of fit this description for this modified version of the Mary Sue. But I just, I guess that's okay because I still love her. And I think she's still flawed. These are well-developed characters that are flawed, but people are trying to diminish them anyway. And that's what I feel like a lot of the, what of calling someone a Mary Sue is just trying to diminish the character and brush them aside.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I agree with you. I have called Rarasong a Mary Sue as well. That is a character, to me, I don't see her as having very many flaws. And that's, for me personally, that's often where I put the line, is does this character have realistic flaws? But even so, I think overall we should just stop using the phrase.
Yeah.
And a lot of these articles that we've both been reading through and linking each other to for the past month or so tend to end with the concept of, let's just write strong characters and leave gender out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, my immediate reaction to that is, yeah. Then I step back and I think, but why should we remove gender from the equation? A woman shouldn't stop having to be a woman to be strong. She shouldn't just have be exactly like a man, but with curves.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think we need to make our women more masculine. I think we need to make them more real. Because mm-hmm. you can be strong and feminine.
I've discussed this on the podcast before. I was watching the Vaginal Fantasy Hangout with Felicia Day, Veronica Belmont, and all those people. And they discuss romance books. And they discuss, you know, character a lot in there. And Hannah Hart from the YouTube show My Drunk Kitchen was a guest host. And she mentioned a story where she had gone to a Hollywood writers meeting. And a male writer said, I'm having a really hard time writing this character. She's a woman and she's supposed to be, and I just can't connect with her. And one of the other writers said, just write it as a man and then just change the name. I'm probably misquoting a little bit, but essentially, you know, we're all skeletons underneath, but at the same time, the way women are raised is still very different from the way men are raised. I mean, when you're separated from the changing of the bodies videos and lectures, you know there's a stark difference between the two genders in more ways than one. It's hard for me to write male characters, but I still try to write a male character as a male. I don't try to write men with the name Catherine and change it to Marvin at the end. It's just a very different experience.
One of the most interesting things I read actually came at the bottom of one of these tests, like how to tell if a character is a Mary Sue, which you can find tons of all over the internet. The final question in this test is, if a female character annoys you, ask yourself a simple question. Would I find the character equally annoying if she were male? If the answer is no, then the character probably isn't a Mary Sue.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just boom. You know? There are plenty of male characters out there that fall into these Mary Sue boxes, except that they're male, so nobody points it out.
Mm-hmm. And quite a few female characters in sci-fi were originally meant to be men. The biggest example of that is Ripley in Alien.
I don't know if too many people are aware of this, but the Wesley Crusher was also originally intended to be female.
Really?
Yes, I believe the original casting call was for Leslie Crusher. An appealing 15-year-old Caucasian girl needs small 18 or almost 18 to play 15. Her remarkable mind and photographic memory make it seem not unlikely for her to become, at 15, a Starfleet acting ensign. Otherwise, she is a normal teenager. That is your definition of a Mary Sue at that point. And mm-hmm. apparently the original concept, Gene Roddenberry had the character be male, and another one of the writers convinced him to change it. And then I guess after casting, they changed it back. And of course, as I think most of our listening audience would know, that Wesley Crusher is named for Eugene Wesley Roddenberry. I mean, it's clearly a huge example of the Mary Sue type in a canon series.
And Wesley is still considered one of those characters that is just not a favorite among fans. And I still see Facebook statuses about him to this day, which is sad. And now that I know that Wesley could have been a girl, I wonder how that would have been different.
I almost wonder if it would have been worse.
That's exactly what I was wondering. But also, strong female character doesn't always mean strong protagonist character, female character.
Well, true.
A few of the examples I can think of are, I mentioned this earlier, Breaking Bad. Breaking Bad has women characters in it who are not wholly good. In fact, many people do not like the female characters in Breaking Bad because they are not perfect.
We hate them when they are perfect. We hate them when they aren't perfect.
We can't win. And also, another few examples I can think of are from musical theater. Mrs. Lovett and Rose from Gypsy. Mama Rose. Not nice people.
No, but Mrs. Lovett's awesome.
Again, she's amazing.
Angela Lansbury. Are you kidding me?
She's, again, strong character, not necessarily protagonist. And, of course, the queen of all strong, complex female characters, Lady Macbeth. Tell me she is not a strong female character.
I think it can be dependent on how she is acted.
Mm-hmm. But on the page, she's brilliant.
Yeah.
She's wonderful. And it also depends on the director's take, too.
Mm-hmm.
That's always worrisome. I mean, if you watch the Macbeth with Patrick Stewart, his Lady Macbeth is amazing. Mm-hmm. So,
where are we? What's happening?
Again, I don't know. Should we discuss comments?
Yes, we should.
Let's do that. And what's funny is that I think people misinterpreted the question I posted on Anomaly. Because I asked men, which character fits your description of a Mary Sue? And then I asked the women, which male character defines Mary Sue to you?
Mm-hmm.
And I started getting a mishmash of everything.
What was interesting about that was the conversation that came out of it. Is that several of our males who replied weren't really familiar with the term.
Yeah.
But it was certainly a term that I think every woman who replied already knew and sounded like they had defended against in the past.
Yeah.
So the pretty generic question I asked on Facebook was, what is the difference between a Mary Sue and a strong female character? Can a character be both? What do you look for in a good, strong, or accurate character, female or not? And my friend Victoria said Mary Sues aren't exclusive to females, which is obvious. And she said she thinks of Superman as a Mary Sue. My friend Jessie said that I'm really only familiar with the term as it generally applies to fan fiction. Is that what you're talking about? And I said yes and sort of explained how it has entered the mainstream. She says she always thought of Tonks from Order of the Phoenix, Harry Potter, as being sort of Mary Sue-ish. She came along and was super cool and everyone loved her. I don't think being strong makes you Mary Sue-ish. I think being really perfect and loved by all the other main characters is part of it. And often for me, it's a character who comes along later in a story or series and doesn't quite fit in right.
I liked Tonks.
That's okay.
I know. We just discussed that.
Exactly.
The exact same question on my Facebook, my friend Tony responded,
Brian Azzarello's, I hope I'm saying that name right, Brian Azzarello's Wonder Woman in DC's New 52 is the best Wonder Woman I have read in a while. And I feel the difference is that a Mary Sue is very cookie cutter. Hannah says Mary Sue's can do no wrong, while real characters show emotional vulnerability, make mistakes, learn from them, and show growth. And my friend Chris just posted the springhole.net link that we have in our show notes. So that was wonderful.
And so what went down on the Anomaly Facebook page?
I asked the group, because I've been thinking about this for a while, and I was interested in the men defining which characters fit their description of a Mary Sue or a strong female character. And I wanted to know from the women which male character to them defines a Gary Stu, Marty Stu, whatever, and a strong male character to them. Jen says Captain Kirk is Gary Stu, to name one Roddenberry character, but I still like him. I think it's still possible to love Mary Sue's and Gary Stu's. They're a nice break from reality, and often they're someone we would love to imitate. Superman is often categorized as a Gary Stu. The Superman I grew up with can do anything. He's perfect, beautiful, and just about everyone except the villains love him. But that's not why he's my favorite superhero. He's my favorite superhero because he symbolizes supreme good. I wish I had his servant's heart. To me, a strong character, be it male or female, doesn't have to kick ass or save the world or be put in a position to solve some serious problems. They just do the best they can at whatever they do, and you love them for it, and quite possibly you identify with them. To me, Laura Roslin is a strong character. President Roslin made some mistakes. She wasn't always a goody-goody, but she's a solid character in spite of the flaws. I respect the hard decisions she made, even though some were criminal, and the inner strength she displayed and the dialogue she exchanged. Roslin was on the bottom of the governmental totem pole, but when she was thrust into a position of power, she did her best to take care of business. She wasn't perfect. She was real up until the very end. I won't spoil it for those who haven't seen the end of BSG, but for those of you who have, you know what I mean. A strong female character is real.
So, Reggie said, I have to be honest here, I've never heard the term Mary Sue or Gary Stu before. I had to Google it. The Wikipedia page has a nice definition, but when I look for examples, I get characters that are polar opposites. How can both Bella from Twilight and Hermione from Harry Potter be Mary Sues? So I ask, what is a Mary Sue? And Jen shared an article from sfnovelist.com. And then Reggie replied again. So I think I've got this whole Mary Sue business down. I think I'd define a Mary Sue as a flat character, the model of perfection, and in many instances, a savant or genius in some field. But I can't say that I easily come up with examples. I can easily make a list of Gary Stews, Wesley Crusher, Picard to an extent, Cyclops, Superman, James Bond. When it comes to Mary Sues, I can't really think of many. I suppose Celine from Underworld, Sookie from True Blood, and I have no idea. An anime character that I'm completely unable to pronounce would be good examples of Mary Sues. Guys just seem to trip over themselves trying to impress or claim these ladies as their own. And no matter how much stuff these characters go through, they never change much. Even though they're a part of the story, events seem to happen around them, with the exception of Celine. I'd define a strong female character in the same way I'd define any strong character, any strong insert adjective character. A strong character is complicated. They have many emotions and motivations. They are true to themselves, and when they aren't, they deal with that. And a strong character affects the world around them and are affected by it. And I'd add that the character typically shouldn't be defined by what they are. Storm is a strong character not because she's a woman, but because she's a strong character. I'd list Storm from X-Men, Barbara Gordon from Birds of Prey, Batgirl, Batman, Zoe from Firefly, and Bo from Lost Girl as strong female characters.
Jim says, Jean Grey was a bit of a Mary Sue for a while, but that's usually tempered with the Dark Phoenix outburst. Outside of that, I try to avoid them. Shout out to the original Mary Sue, Mary Sue.
So Oren commented several times, but I will read them as one. He first shows surprise and says, "How on earth can Hermione be considered a Mary Sue? I think she would be the genius Sue, don't you think?" By the technical definition, a Mary Sue has to be a direct representation of the author, so it's actually a pretty rare occurrence. That said, the term has pretty clearly grown beyond that. I would generally consider a Mary Sue to be a character where the author is just convinced of how cool they are and continually tell us rather than actually showing us. By that definition, I think John Sheridan and Catherine Janeway meet the criteria sometimes. They've got plenty of instances where the other characters gush about how cool they are, but we actually don't see any evidence of it. It's upsetting that female characters sometimes get called Mary Sues because they dare to be able to do things. Adama and Kira are both strong characters because we're shown they're awesome rather than told.
Word. I think those are all the comments we have.
Mm-hmm. So we definitely have not really drawn many conclusions here, other than that the concept and pervasiveness of this Mary Sue business is annoying.
Yes.
Let's stop calling every woman who can do something a Mary Sue. Okay?
Okay.
So this is obviously more of a conversational topic, and we're happy to continue the conversation. So if you have opinions about what makes a Mary Sue, or what makes a good, I'll refrain from using strong, but a good and realistic female character, or any character, tell us who you don't like because of their lack of character development, or who you do like, or someone, maybe a character that you love and somebody else hates because they think they consider them to be a Mary Sue, or the other way around.
So support these strong female characters of the Anomaly podcast by going to our webpage. If you would like to make a donation, you may make a PayPal donation, or you can visit our store and buy merchandise. All proceeds go to hosting and hopefully new equipment. Next month on Anomaly Supplemental, our Halloween episode is going to be Why is Horror So Appealing?
And we will do everything we can to make sure that our Halloween episode actually comes out sometime around Halloween this year. And not in August.
Well, as long as there isn't a hurricane, we'll be fine.
Don't jinx it, dude.
I live in Texas. I'm not jinxing anything.
I think that's it.
Yeah. Well, we hope you enjoyed this episode of Anomaly Supplemental. Because we're not re-recording it. So that wraps it up. I'm Casey.
I'm Sue.
And you've been listening to Anomaly Supplemental.
All the cool kids keep enthusiasm rationed, right down to the last explosive ounce. But I'd rather indulge my many passions, even if my squaritude's a little too pronounced. Perhaps I do not strike you as a geek.
If you wish to contact the Anomaly Supplemental, you can at the email address, which is moregirlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks with a Z at gmail.com. Or if you like hearing the sound of your own voice, like I do, you can call the voicemail line at 248-419-GEEK. Yes, it's one of those numbers that you can use alphabets on, and that's 248-419-4335. To stay up to date with Anomaly and Anomaly Supplemental News, you can follow them on Twitter at Anomaly Podcast. That's the at symbol, A-N-O-M-A-L-Y podcast. Check out the Anomaly blog for geeky articles and Anomaly Supplemental show notes. Find it online at anomalypodcast.com. That's A-N-O-M-A-L-Y-podcast.com. Theme music is used by permission of Marion Call. Thank you, Marion. Find out more at mariancall.com. Or, of course, you can follow her on Twitter at Marion Call. That's MarianCall. Anomaly was created under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 Unported License. Say that three times fast.
The world is much too interesting to entertain ugly, and I won't ever play it cool, so I won't ever once be bored. Oh,
have been a nerd since long before anyone heard that fair and scrawny was the latest fashion trend. And I still be a geek after nobody thinks it's chic, because I don't require approval in the end.
Seriously, either coffee or some form of alcohol just makes our podcast so much more entertaining.